1450 WHTC, it is 9:32 and it's Friday, and welcome to Talk of the Town, the program in which you, the listeners, join us with your telephone calls. Our number 395-1450. I'm Greg Chandler, sitting in for Juke, and Juke will be back next week, but I'll be sitting in today, and we've got a number of guests, and we actually have a guest on right now. It's our monthly Ask the Attorney segment. We're joined in the house by Nathan Box. Good morning, Nathan.
Good morning, Greg.
And Nathan, let's see, it's been a while since you've been on the show, but what would you like to talk about today?
Well, you know, I was thinking about it on the drive over this morning. I always like to talk about either things that are timely based on the time of year or things that have been going on a lot in the office. It's vacation time. It's the dog days of summer. The fact that Juke is on vacation is actually fairly fitting because I see a lot of people right before they head out on vacations. I do estate planning, small business, and real estate work, and a lot of people are doing their estate planning, and they're going to be getting on a plane. A lot of times it's couples without their taking a vacation without their children, and they go, oh, my goodness, we have not gotten our affairs in order. What if something happens to us on vacation? And so I thought it'd be a little bit fitting to talk about today. What are those kinds of things you need to be thinking about while you're out there on vacation? And actually, before you go out on vacation, because as I said, I get a lot of calls about a week before people head out, and they go, hey, you know, we'd really like to get things straightened out before we head out. We're going to be leaving on vacation, and we're leaving in a week. And my response usually is, well, we'll see how much we can get done for you in that week. But it's awfully difficult to get it done that quickly. But I have done very quick turnaround for folks when they've needed it. But really what you need to be thinking about is, you know, do you have your will or your trust put together? If you've got minor children, have you made those decisions and laid that out in your estate planning documents?
Who's going to care for the kids if something should happen to both the parents?
Exactly. Who should take care of the kids if something happens to both of the parents? Who's going to take care of the kids if something happens to that child while you're gone on vacation? So if you're going to California or Hawaii or Mexico and something happens to you, especially if you're out of the country, it may be difficult to get a hold of you right away. What if Johnny falls down and breaks his leg while he's gone? Grandma and grandpa are taking care of him. Question becomes, what's going to happen? Do I need to give, you know, a power of attorney to grandma and grandpa to be able to take care of those kinds of things? Do I need to have permission slips for grandma and grandpa to be able to make those decisions? My opinion is, it's better to have paperwork in place if you can. My kids go on a lot of mission trips with church, and we're forever filling out medical release forms and saying it's sure. All right for the leader to you know, make medical care decisions for my children if I'm not there. And actually, I've taken other people's kids on vacation with us, and somebody said, did you get medical permission forms for them to be able to make decisions while they're in Florida with you? And I said, actually, no, I didn't, because I'm familiar with how the process works. It is sometimes easier to get that taken care of, but if Johnny falls down and breaks his leg, and grandma and grandpa take him into the hospital, and the hospital's going to say, well, are you his parents? No, we're not. We're his grandparents, you know, but he's broken his leg. What's the hospital going to do? Are they going to sit and wait until they get a hold of Johnny's parents before they set that leg? Not
right.
Likely.
Right.
You know, likelihood is if it's treatment that is of an emergent nature, they are going to do what they need to do to get Johnny stabilized and out of pain, and then they're gonna take the look for parents down the road, regardless of whether there's a medical release form or not.
Sure.
Now, if Johnny needs additional surgery on top of that, you know, they find out that there's more damage in there and they need to do some surgery, but that surgery doesn't necessarily need to be done for several days, they're going to make every effort to get a hold of Johnny's parents before they do that.
Right.
So with those emergency situations, you're going to have the ability, with or without that paperwork, to be able to get those things done, because the hospital knows that those kinds of things need to get done. If it's a discretionary thing, if grandma and grandpa bring Johnny in and say, hey, we'd like to get Johnny's mole removed while his parents are out of town, and they don't have any documentation that says they have the right to do that, hospital's likely to say, you know what, let's wait until we have the parents here to be able to take care of those kinds of things.
Sure.
But what's important to have for grandma and grandpa to make life easier for them? Well, it'd be awfully nice if grandma and grandpa had a copy of your medical insurance card. You know, think of those things that you need when you go to the hospital or when you go to the doctor's office. You need proof of who you are, proof of who they are, proof that you've got insurance or whatever coverage that you may have, so that the hospital knows how to do the billing information that's there. And then also try to get as much contact information as you can for the parents so that you can try to get them on the phone if you can. But, you know, I've been out of town. I've been on vacation out of the country and been in places where you simply can't get a hold of us at any reasonable amount of time. And so in those instances, the hospital's likely to take care of those things for you.
395-1450, our number. If you've got a question for Nathan and are on any legal related matter,
I'll either answer anything that they throw at me, or I'll give them a good referral to somebody who can answer that question.
Well,
for
absolutely, and you bring up a good point. This is the time of the year where Johnny or Janie goes off to a summer camp. They're a Boy Scout camp, or they're one of the many sports camps that Hope College puts
Certainly.
On every
yes.
year. Things like that. Most of the places they have the parents fill out all the medical information well in advance. But do you have a situation where sometimes that information isn't always available, or the people organizing the event don't quite take the time to take care of those details?
That happens, and hopefully, you know, we hope that it doesn't, and we hope that if it's a well-organized group or organization or camp that they've got their paperwork in order. But it's going to be that similar kind of situation that if Johnny's at a Hope College soccer camp, I've seen lots of soccer kids. Janie, I think it's been a girls' soccer camp this week from
right.
the people I've seen walking around downtown. And she gets hurt. Again, it's going to be one of those things where if it's an emergency situation, they're going to do what they need to do to get her stabilized. Once it goes beyond that, once they get past the stabilization point, they're going to do what they need to do in order to get a hold of the parents, to let the parents make those decisions on the next step in terms of what it is that needs to happen. And so while the paperwork is incredibly important and very important for those camps to know, you know, if Janie has allergies to certain medications, you know, if Janie has other issues, if Janie's got asthma or epilepsy or those kinds of things, we definitely want the people who are taking care of her for the week to know that kind of information. But I always tell parents to not be overly concerned. Yes, you're concerned about Janie, obviously, but you don't have to worry that if Janie gets hurt, they're going to let her lay there writhing in pain with a broken leg and not do anything about it simply because they can't get a hold of you because your cell phone battery died for the afternoon. They're going to move forward with those kinds of things. But you want to make sure that you've filled out all of that information. You've looked at all of those release forms. And I deal with those camps. I deal with a lot of churches as well with those release forms. We try to be very careful, one, about the information that we gather, and two, about making sure that we make smart, safe decisions if there is an event that occurs. But oftentimes those decisions need to be made very quickly. And so what we do is we hope that the counselors at the camp, the representatives from the medical profession, do what a reasonable person would do under the circumstances.
Sure. I just spoke with a gentleman earlier this week who's a youth pastor at a church in Hudsonville, and he just took a group of young people, over 30 of them, on a mission trip to Guatemala.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if it's a mission trip, you know, and sometimes it's through a church, sometimes it's through a ministry that sponsors this trip. How does that work?
I'm pretty familiar with that. I've got a daughter on a mission trip in West Virginia right now.
Okay.
I had a son earlier this summer on a mission trip in Honduras. I'm glad that I didn't know that some of the cities that he visited in Honduras are now the most dangerous cities in the world. We're starting to see news reports from places where he was. He's 17 years old and spent a week in Honduras at a medical clinic, but also went through some of those big dangerous cities. And there is a certain amount of information that's gathered and hopefully held by the adults that are with that trip. You know, you want to be careful as a parent that you know who it is that's in charge of the trip, that's managing those things, and who's taking care of your kids while they're away. You know, I happen to know the people personally that were on both of those trips. But when you're taking somebody to Guatemala, when you're taking kids to a place like Honduras, you know, your passports are involved, and there's a lot of releases that have to go on with that. You want to make sure that they've got all of the authority and all of the ducks in a row, and that they're managing those documents, because the last thing you want that church to do is lose the 3-ring binder that contains 30 kids' passports. When they're in Honduras, you want to make sure that they're not letting those kids wander off on their own, which my son said, hey, there were a couple of times where we were trying to get the youth pastors to let us go down to the beach. And the youth pastor said, there's absolutely no way we're letting you go down to the beach. It's way too dangerous for you to be down to the, at the beach. And he said, yeah, they wouldn't let us be on our own anytime, anywhere. And I said, well, thank goodness they wouldn't let you do that. But you want to make sure they're, you know who those people are, you know that they're making smart decisions, and that you're keeping an eye on the news reports from the places where those kids are going. I had a son who was going to be going to Haiti on a trip, and they at the very last moment changed the location of the trip because it was just simply too dangerous to go to Haiti at the time that he was going to go on that trip. So you want to be you want to be aware, but also recognize that if you're within the United States, odds are things are going to go pretty well if you've got reasonable people managing things. Once you get out of the country, you've got a little bit more to worry about. If my son had a broken leg in Honduras, I think my first thought would be, let's get him back to the U.S.
Oh, sure, absolutely. 1450 WHTC, and we're back with Talk of the Town, and back with Attorney Nathan Box, and 395-1450 if you got a question for Nathan regarding any legal-related matter. And Nathan, I got a phone call on my message yesterday, and my father passed away a few months ago.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
Yeah, and the point of the question is, I got a call from a collection company wanting to speak to the person that is in charge of the records for the financial records for my father. I got the name of the business, and I quickly deduced that it was a debt collector that is looking to collect on some debts that my father had. Mm-hmm. And exactly how does that work? If when someone passes away, do the debts automatically pass to surviving members? How does that work?
This is a question that comes up a lot because people pass away and they oftentimes have debts. And the question from the family members is, who's responsible for paying those debts? Where does the money come from to pay for those debts? What are we supposed to do about this? And the simple answer is that the sins of the father are not visited upon the son. So you have no personal responsibility to pay those debts off for him. However, if he had any assets of his own at the time that he passed away, those assets do need to be used to pay those debts.
Yeah, he did not. He had just his house, and the house still has a mortgage on it and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So.
And I received a call about something similar to that earlier this week from a financial advisor who was working with someone who said, you know, all there is a house. There was a reverse mortgage on the house. The house is not worth what the debt is that's on the house. There were no other assets, and the kids are asking them, what is it that we're supposed to do here? And I said, well, the kids could just walk away. They don't have any obligation to wrap up the affairs of the parent. Let whoever was giving them the reverse mortgage deal with the house and take care of it that way. But I said, if he did have any assets, those assets need to be used to pay off whatever debts are there. And what happens is there's a hierarchy of who gets paid first. And within the particular categories in that hierarchy, you use the money, you know, say the top category is the IRS and then the funeral homes and the accountants. And believe it or not, the lawyers get up in that first category, first tier categories. I know it is, isn't it? We all go to Lansing and we write the laws, so we make sure that we're covered on those kinds of things. So within that first tier, you know, say there is $200,000 worth of debt and $100,000 worth of assets because maybe your dad's house has some value. Maybe there was some equity there. While we sell the house, we've got now $100,000 worth of assets and $200,000 worth of debt. And within that first tier, there's $50,000 worth of debt between the funeral and the lawyers and the IRS. And so everybody in that first tier gets paid at 100%. So $50,000 of the $100,000 is used in that first tier. And those are generally secured debts. As well, if there was money that was owed on the house directly, that gets paid off directly as well. And then we move into the next tier, and those are unsecured debts, things like credit cards. And so say he had $150,000 worth of credit card and other unsecured debt. Boy, that'd be a lot of credit card debt. But just for this example, there's a lot of credit card debt there. And there's $150,000 in debt, but only $50,000 in assets left to pay that debt. What do we do? Well, within that next tier, we pay everybody proportionally. So they get, you know, they get essentially, what would that be, 25 cents on the dollar, or 33 cents on the dollar, I guess it would be, 33 cents on the dollar for the debt that's owed. And that's generally the way that it works. There's actually three different tiers usually that we work with. There's the top tier that's the IRS, and then there's the secured debts, and then there's the unsecured debts. And so we pay off each tier in order 100% if we can, and then when we get to a tier where there's not enough money to pay everybody off, we pay that proportionally.
I see.
But the kids are not obligated at all to chip in any of their own money. They're not obligated to do anything with the estate, although I oftentimes have kids who come in and say, I feel a moral obligation here to wrap things up at least. And I have done probates where the net value of the estate is a negative number, and I usually get a call from the probate court saying, how can this be a negative number? And I say, well, they had more debts than assets. And they say, well, why are they going through this process? Well, because they wanted to wrap things up. That becomes common with things like credit card debt. It was also much more common in the days, and this was 10, 15 years ago, when you could get 110, 115% mortgage on your house, you know, where they were offering, you know, if you got a $100,000 house, we'll lend you $115,000. And I did have one instance where the woman did that, took the money from the house, so now she's got $115,000 debt on a $100,000 house, and took the money, paid off other debts, credit card debts, those kinds of things, and then died. And so now the main asset is a house that is underwater. And the kids said, what do we do? And I said, well, you don't have to do anything. But they said, no, we feel obligated here. And so they ended up wrapping things up. And what people also find is a lot of times credit card companies will forgive the debt of the person who passed away. Dead people get a lot of benefits that live people don't, I've found. I had one gentleman who had been living in his mother's house. And by the time I got involved, he'd been gone for 6 or 8 months. I was wrapping up the estate, come to find out nobody had been living in the house, and the cable had still been on. And so this cable bill had been racking up for the last 6 or 8 months. And so I called the cable company. I said, we need to shut it off. Two, we need a final bill, you know, send us a bill for all of the services. And the woman on the other end of the line said, well, when did he die? And I said, well, he died like 6 or 8 months ago, gave her the date. And she said, well, has anybody been living in the house? And I said, no. And she said, anybody been watching the TV? I said, no. She goes, okay, well, we'll just backdate the bill to the day that he died. And I said, well, that's wonderful that you did that. I wasn't expecting that you were going to do that. You know, imagine if you called the cable company and said, you know, I haven't been watching my TV for the last 6 months, and I haven't been paying my cable bill either. Could you just, you know, shut it off and make the effective date the day I quit watching TV?
That won't quite work the same way.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't at all. And we oftentimes have credit card companies who will completely forgive a bill. They'll say, well, they passed away. Don't worry about it. You don't need to worry about paying it. And we'll say, there might be money after we sell the house. No, that's all right. We'll write it off. And I'm often surprised when those kinds of things happen, and you'd never get away with that if you were alive.
Right.
But you can oftentimes get away with it after you've passed away.
No, that's very interesting, because so many people, I mean, you know, particularly people, you know, in my age bracket that have aging parents and all that, you know, those are the type of questions that they often don't find out about until after a parent dies.
It is a big question. I had one recently where the daughters came in. Dad had died. Dad had debt, more debt than assets. But Dad also had a life insurance policy. He had a term life insurance policy for $15,000 or $20,000. They were the beneficiaries on that life insurance policy. And they said, do we have to pay his debts? I said, you only need to use his assets to pay the debts. And I said, do we need to use the life insurance proceeds? And I said, since you're the named beneficiary on that and there's no cash value on that, no. That $15,000 went to them, and the debts went unpaid. That's a relatively unusual situation, but it does happen.
Yeah, we have a caller actually on the line here. Good morning. You're on the air with Nathan Box.
Hi. I was wondering, and I realize you're lawyers, but what is your take on reverse mortgages?
It's really situation specific. It can be a good thing to do if you need that stream of income and you've got the equity in the house. There are certain circumstances where it can be a good thing to use for a particular person. But you're right, I'm a lawyer. I don't like making blanket statements and saying, yes,
right,
they're all good or no, they're all bad.
But I've
seen circumstances.
There are more than one kind?
There are different terms for those mortgages, and it's going to depend on what your financial situation is and what your age is and your house. But, yes, there are different ways to be able to do it.
Okay. Thanks.
You're very welcome.
That's a good question. And I suppose you get a lot of questions about reverse mortgages, I guess, dealing with a senior population?
I do with a lot of seniors. We deal with a lot of those issues of finances and how are they going to be able to fund their retirement and the remainder of their lives. We also look at a lot of issues regarding Medicaid and nursing home care planning, and kids are concerned about those kinds of things as well. And the problem that a lot of seniors run into, they run into one of two things. One is they either are worried that they're not going to have enough assets to be able to survive, and two, they worry about this nest egg that they have built up over the years. That they didn't live high on the hog. They saved their money, and now they're looking at long-term medical expenses, long-term care expenses, and saying, you know, is it fair that all of this money that we have put together over the years needs to go to that, and we can't leave it to our kids the way that we wanted to leave it to our kids? And so we do a lot of planning to try to help people through that process. Go ahead.
Okay, we have another caller on the line. Morning, you're on Talk of the Town with Nathan Box.
Hi, I have a quick question. About 6 months ago, I had a lady that pulled out in front of me, and I ended up hitting her and smashing the front of my vehicle, and I had PLPD on it. And in the long run, she had no insurance at all. In fact, she falsified the information that she gave to the police officer.
Okay.
She said it was like her mother's insurance card, and then she just basically didn't have insurance, and she never admitted to it. Is there anything that we can do for that?
This is an area that I don't practice in, so the details of this that I have in my head are old and fuzzy, and so my recommendation to you is, one, you're going to want to talk to your insurance carrier about it, and two, you may want to talk to an attorney that deals with these kinds of accident cases, because they will know very well what it is that you can do and can't do.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
All right, thank you.
I think we've got time for one more call here. Good morning. You're on Talk of the Town with Nathan Box.
Yeah, I was wondering if a senior citizen or, older folk goes into a nursing home and has assets like a home, mm-hmm. car and stuff, and then lives on beyond what they can pay to the nursing home. They use up all their money,
mm-hmm.
and then end up dying at the nursing home. Can the nursing home go back on the sale of the house?
They can now in Michigan if that home goes through the probate court process. It's called the Michigan Medicaid Recovery Act, although there are ways around that. And the best bet, the thing that I always tell people, if there's somebody in the nursing home, you need to talk to an attorney that specializes in this area. I actually do that myself. I practice in this area, and oftentimes we can save the home. We can save significant amount of the assets as well. We can keep them from having to be all used up in that process. But it takes careful planning by somebody who does a lot of that. So I would say to people, as soon as mom enters the nursing home or dad enters the nursing home, you want to call the attorney right away.
Okay, so there is a way to get around it, but if it goes through probate, then it gets back to the cell.
Yeah, the state's going to go after to get reimbursed through the probate court process, yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Okay, and that's about going to about do it. It's been a fast 30 minutes, Nathan, but we thank you for coming in to talk with us. A lot of good information you've shared with us this morning on a lot of different Eagle. And how can people get a hold of you?
Nathan Box, B-O-C-K-S. I'm with Central Park Law over on South Shore Drive, and it's 395-3761 or centralparklaw.pro. You can go to our website.
Well, Nathan Box, thank you for joining us here on Talk of the Town this morning.